We're good. I'll do that.
Welcome back to JK Moto Podcast, a weekly, lately, but not officially, motorcycle podcast for the everyday rider, covering current bike and racing news, specializing in track days, club racing, and
track days.
Great entertainment.
Oh my God.
We truly do it all. And this week we are brought to you by JK Moto Entertainment. It's right back there. Which is your one-stop shop for all your track day club racing questions and answers. Subscribe on YouTube, follow on Instagram and Facebook at JK Moto Entertainment. We had another great round.
The whole weekend, actually.
Yeah, it was a great weekend of the greatest sport on earth. I have decided that. I have decided that it is officially the greatest sport on earth.
Today, we're declaring... I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay, all right.
We're declaring it now, though. Interim. MotoGP, greatest sport ever.
Greatest sport on earth.
So I can get back with another one.
I forget, they had some phrase this weekend. There was, when I was down in Austin 2 years ago, they were like, come watch the daredevils of MotoGP. And I was like, I guess the general American has no idea what MotoGP is.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, okay, cool. But it had like Brad Binder on the front, who at that point really hadn't done anything. And then the daredevils of MotoGP. And I was like, what are we trying to sell? Like, this isn't an
This last weekend, they're referring to Austin as the horsepower rodeo and all that. That's pretty good. I'd buy tickets to that. I was hearing that. I was like, ooh, that's good.
I've heard that one before. That is good. I agree with that. I mean, you got to make it kind of like American, and apparently all Americans do rodeo stuff, or at least Texas, which is weird because, anyway, we're not getting into America. But MotoGP, greatest sport on earth. We had another round. They were down in Qatar. One of my personal favorites for weird reasons. Not a huge fan of the track. Like, I'm not, like, absolutely in love with the track. But
like, track shape or the racing, like, the overtaking and braking opportunities that happen?
Both.
Both? Okay.
But I love the fact that it happens at night.
Night races are pretty cool.
Yeah.
The lighting is just different. Everything's just, yeah, I love it.
I just love when they have the overhead shot and they come in
like,
in the helicopter and you just see, like, the outline of the track. And that's it.
Yeah, when they zoom out and it's like, oh, my goodness. And they zoom out and it's, like, dark. And then you just have the floodlights just illuminating the track.
Yeah. Also, they've done some cool light shows there before where they'll, like, blink different lights around the track. It's super cool. I think the night thing is super cool. Obviously, on the desert, you kind of have to for the heat, I think, is why they do it. Or just because they can.
Some of those places, even at night, it's still hot. It's just the coolest it will get.
Yeah, which you kind of have to for the bikes and everything. But, yeah, it's a super cool opportunity. Anyway, we're going to get all into it. We'll run an intro here in a second. Before we do that, I do got to ask that if you're on YouTube, please click the subscribe button down below. And if you're not, go check out the YouTube channel. There's a lot of other great content on there that isn't the podcast, to include our latest video, which is talking about being a track day noob, or rather how not to do that. And if you see us doing this tonight, I named the flies in the latest video. They're named Bill and Jack. So they're still in here. So just be aware of that. Anyway, on that great note.
That'll teach you to open your garage.
Yeah. Yeah. Never open your garage door. But on that great note, let's roll an intro, get into some MotoGP.
My first track day, I got the pictures back, and I was like, I'm never doing that again. On the ground at 100 miles an hour.
And we're back. We're back.
That might be a thing.
It's going to become a thing. I mean, it's got to be a thing. Yeah, no, seriously, though, like, I've thought about it. I'm like, doing a motorcycle podcast at this level, which all the listeners out there, I love you guys. Glad you guys are listening, watching, everything else. Keep it up. Tell your friends. Follow. Subscribe. Whatever it might be. Leave us a review. I think that goes a long ways. But we're doing this for fun. I'm not making any money doing this. Make a little bit of money with the YouTube stuff, and I appreciate all the support there. But the truth is, there's like this weird, small part of me, and I know that like this is a very long shot, but there's a small part of me that's like, hey, one day you'll have this like backlog of, look, I've done MotoGP commentating. They'll watch it and be like, this is terrible. Well, okay, but yeah. Anyway, MotoGP, Qatar. Anyway, the night part. I brought that up because earlier I was I was talking with the old lady and just talking about, like, I'd love to go watch MotoGP in another country, but I think honestly, like, the first one I would want to go to outside of, if you're traveling to another country, obviously you're not just going for MotoGP. I mean,
speak for yourself.
But yeah,
I would go 100% to watch this.
That's why I'm going, but I'm not going to be able to convince the whole family to go with me just to watch a singular motorcycle race and go home. Maybe.
Not with that attitude you're getting to.
But I was like, if I was going to pick one thing or one like race to go watch, I think Qatar would be super cool because like even during the race, they'll show a section of the track and the inside of it. Like I don't even know what's in there. Is it infield? Is it a pond? Is it like a carousel?
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, who knows?
But especially some of the buildings around the track itself.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But it's just super cool. I love the night thing. I wish we had a couple more of those on the calendar. So if you work for Dorna / what is it? Liberty Media, I think now.
Liberty isn't Liberty Media F1 Dorna? Or they own? Yeah, so, do they own both?
Yeah, Liberty Media bought. Oh, you didn't know this?
No, I knew they bought F1. I didn't know they bought.
This is old news. Last year, I'm new. Right at the end of the season, they didn't really do anything with it, but I think it was right at the end or just after the season ended. Liberty Media bought MotoGP. They kept Dorna, so Dorna still exists, and Dorna is still in charge. Liberty Media just said, hey, we're just going to be here, and we're going to give you some tips. So that's why we got, like, new logos, new soundtracks-ish, a revamp of that. They did the whole, like, season kickoff thing this year. There's a lot of new things that the rest of the world outside of America will tell you that freaking Americans come in and we ruin everything because Liberty Media is an American-owned company. I haven't minded it. I think it'll be good for it. I also am kind of hoping for selfish reasons that it brings another American track to MotoGP in the future.
That's true. From my understanding, the only American track on the grid right now is COTA.
Yes.
That's it. End list.
That is correct. Yeah. We used to race at Laguna Seca. Everyone kind of remembers that one. The ones that people don't remember are Indianapolis. And
MotoGP used to be at Indianapolis?
Yep, Indianapolis Motor Speedway. They would race there. And there was, I swear there was one other. No, I guess there was just a couple of years where it was Indianapolis, COTA, and Laguna Seca. And I don't think they ever raced anywhere else. I could be wrong. I might be missing one. It's been a long time since I've been back that far in the history. So if you guys know, throw that down in the comments. Correct me. There might have been one more. But yeah, actually, Mark Marquez has raced at Indianapolis. He's had a very good track record in America. They're bringing that up kind of all over the place this season, especially when they go to COTA. That was 2 weeks ago. But yeah, so I'm hoping they go back or come back to another track somewhere. Laguna Seca is out. I think Indianapolis is out. And I don't know where else would be good enough for them. Because COTA, you've never been to COTA. But you go to all your like little tracks around here for track days or anywhere in the country. And you might see like a section of grandstands. I would say that the Ridge and Barber are probably the two like biggest you've been to as far as that goes. I guess Road Atlanta is pretty decent too, but they don't have as many grandstands. They just have that big kind of one section. But MotoGP needs like big old huge grandstands. It's a lot less about that and a lot more about the FIM regulations on the track.
Yeah.
But also like, to make money, they have to bring people in. So if they don't have enough seating for people, they're not going to want to do it. So if you go to COTA, COTA's like wild. It's huge. I mean, you've seen it on TV. Like it is nuts to show up there and think about like doing a track day there or doing club racing there because it just feels kind of
like a ghost town just because there's so much room.
Yeah, yeah. It's absolutely huge. It's awesome, and it makes sense. It's a world event. So out of the tracks in the U.S. that are big enough for that. And then still meet the requirements, because that's the issue with Laguna Seca is they kind of ran out of room to expand, and so it's not safe enough anymore. So MotoGP is not allowed to go there. But
do you think they might rotate back there once they bring the new regulations with the 800cc bikes?
I doubt it. I believe it has a lot more to do with runoff room and different regulations like that than it does just the top speed you hit, because Laguna Seca doesn't have a particularly long straight anywhere. It was just like certain corners don't have enough runoff, don't have enough room for gravel pits or different stuff like that, as far as I've understood. And like I said, they used to like make changes, expand, bring things in, and make it so that they would stay up to date with the world safety regulations. There's maybe But the rumor has it when they go down to the 850ccs, they're not actually going to get any slower. They're just not going to get faster from there on out. Like, we'll stop with the top speed records, but realistically, the bikes aren't going to be slower going around the track because the manufacturers are just going to find other ways to
make up time.
Yeah, get better lap times. So I think the thought is like, hey, smaller bike, can't have as much horsepower, but you can find other ways. You'll always find other ways. So managing grip. Also, it might be easier to manage grip without as much horsepower.
Lighter bike, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll be roasting the tires as fast possibly.
Yeah, but Qatar, that's what we're actually here to talk about. I'm trying to think of another track they could go to now. I don't know.
Any of the European tracks? Australia.
Well, that's what sucks is like they go to Spain, Thailand. Twice. They go to multiple other countries twice because they're all in Europe. And I'm just stuck over here watching my MotoGP at 3 o'clock in the morning if I want to watch it live. Or waking up, going to work, coming home, not being able to look at social media.
Yeah, it's dangerous. You can't do it.
On accident, one day you look, you're like, okay. And then you're sitting there, you're like watching it. You're like, this is still kind of exciting, but like I know how it ends.
Nah, yeah.
Anyway, I hate it. But if you don't want to know how it ends, you should probably go ahead and not listen to this podcast anymore because we're going to talk about how it ends. And it ends with a 93 in first and first and first. And we can probably just wrap up the podcast right
That's
here.
That's it. Marquez still on top.
Yeah.
Who could have seen this coming? I saw a lot of good things happen this weekend, though.
I mean...
No, Fabio Quartararo qualified third. It didn't keep it, but hey, I was happy to see him up there.
Yeah, so I watched free practice on Friday, and I watched practice on Friday.
I have to go back and watch free practice now.
Yeah, well, it was
specifically
okay.
Qualifying.
It was okay. Qualifying is what I missed.
Yeah.
Right? And I also want to go back and watch it because I showed up for, came home on Saturday, turned on the sprint, and I'm looking at the grid, and I always skip to like just right before the race starts. And I'm like, wait a second, is that it? That's a Quartararo.
Yeah, it
in
was.
Third?
No, it was fifth? Like it was like 3-2-0. I was like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
It's a blue 2-0, blue 20.
It was nuts. And then you find out that Pecco is all the way back in 11th.
I did see that. And I was like, spicy.
Rough. Yeah.
I was curious to what happened because he generally qualifies all right at least. I've never seen him qualify that bad.
Yeah, I mean, we talked last week. You know, he's a slow burner type. He kind of works his way into it. Once again, I didn't watch qualifying. I'll have to go back and watch that and see. If you guys have the sneaks, let us know. But
he did get better throughout the weekend. Sunday, he showed up on Sunday.
He did. Yeah, Pecco ran a great race on Sunday. The sprint, he
did make up some places, I believe, just not as much as he did on Sunday.
So it's extremely interesting. There was a lot of interesting dynamics this weekend. A great weekend. I think it was one of the best Qatar races I've seen in a while. Best race I've seen so far this season. Best sprint, I don't know, but the weekend overall was great. One of the biggest things that made it great to me, Jorge's back. We'll talk about him later because there's some drama there. We'll get into that. But then also, the sprint and the race had like fights happen in it. And the race specifically.
Up and down the grid, the whole way.
All over, right? The camera was constantly moving around. The race specifically had quite a bit of drama in it. It wasn't just a Marquez takes off and leaves. That's kind of what the sprint was. But it was looking like your standard Mark Alex 1-2, and then the race happened, and got into it. But what's weird to me is we left America with Pecco on top, winning. Alex at the top of the championship, and Mark DNFing. Now, Mark is relatively more mature, I think, this season. I think he is trying to win that championship, obviously. I would hope so. He's on a factory bike now. He kind of owes it to them to do that. So I think he's mature enough to kind of slow down, and if he needs to take a second, he can take a second place or a third place or whatever. That being said, I haven't really seen that energy from him yet.
I don't think he's got that in him. He's just always going to send it.
Maybe it's just me holding on to this, like, oh, he'll be okay. But what's weird is that there's certain parts in the race now. I'll be watching a race. We got to get all the Mark Marquez stuff out of the way. I'm sorry. If you guys are new to the show, I'm a Mark Marquez fan. We're going to spend a decent amount of time talking about him.
One of our guys has to win, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hey, at least you know there's a fan of someone that is actually good.
Whoa. I resent that statement.
But anyway, we'll get that out of the way. We'll keep talking about everyone else also. But watching the race and realizing that, like, they talk about how calculated this guy is.
He is calculated.
And how he does everything on purpose. And, like, people were giving him crap in COTA because of the commotion he caused on the grid. He knew the rules. and he played 100% by the rules. They're now looking at rewriting the rules because, well, I don't know. That might be hearsay from stupid articles that I read. FIM and Dorna haven't actually officially come out and said anything, but anyway. But you watch him in a race now, and like, for instance, today in Qatar, he sat behind Morbidelli for a good bit, and then he sat behind Maverick Vinales for a good bit. And then at the end of the race, there's four laps to go, and he clicks out the fastest lap of the race, and then clicks it out again, and pulls from a half second to a 2 second gap like no one else was around.
And he had it in the tank the whole time, obviously.
Yeah. So
Once he made that pass, it was like, all right, commentators say he'll put his head down and he'll just start clicking him off, and then just like that.
Boom, boom, boom. Done. Yeah, and it's wild to watch. And we don't have to talk about Mark much more after this because, what do you know, he won. He took first. He's doing some crazy things. This is the first time he's won in Qatar since 2014.
Yeah.
So that was a crazy part too, is he came in this
weekend.
Got
7 out of 8 first places, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe he's not that good, right?
But he came into this weekend saying, hey, I'm probably not going to do that great. I'm not historically very good here. These other people are probably not going to do that well. And then flash forward, did pretty good. But yeah, just watching him race and then thinking about like how calculated he is. And then I put myself, I'm going to attempt to do a little bit of racing this year. I've been in and race before. It wasn't much, but I did a club race. And putting myself in like the perspective of how many things are going through your head when you come across the finish line, you get a board for a half a second, a split second, while you're doing 350 kilometers an hour, whatever that is in normal units.
It's like 180 around there. Yeah.
Dang near 200 miles an hour, you're cooking down this front straight. A little board pops out that says 6.3 plus 7 something something minus this. And you have to read that, acknowledge it, calculate in your head, how fast did I do the last lap? How fast did they do the last lap? Where
that time differential is.
Yeah.
Because where you can make time up. And a lot of times, too, especially when they, like, follow someone for a few laps, it's like, oh, he's breaking here. Mm-hmm. If I break here, I can get him. I can set this pass up like this. And just knowing, just processing all that information.
Yeah. Well, also racing a freaking motorcycle, which you've done some track days. Most of the audience has done some track days. Think about thinking about those things while you're out there. The next time you're watching MotoGP, just watch that guy and think about it. You start to kind of realize, and I'm going to put him on a pedestal because I think he deserves it, but you start to kind of realize, like...
Are you putting arguably one of the best MotoGP riders of all time on a pedestal where he belongs? Is that what's going on here?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, making sure I'm following.
Is there confusion there?
Oh, yeah. I was a little confused, you know?
Okay. All right. Yeah. Where he belongs. But I just sit there and I think about it. I'm like, he's sitting behind Maverick. And I realize, I'm like, he's not slower than Maverick.
No.
He knows exactly what he's doing.
Granted, KTM is fast.
They've got some straight line speed.
They do.
When they can pick it up and cook, they can pick it up and cook.
Speaking of that,
let's close out of Vinales. And I got to get back to Bagnaia. I realize I kind of said some stuff about him. But we got to talk about Maverick.
He did... What did he finish on?
Second.
Was it 10th during the sprint?
Yeah.
But during the... R.I.P. During the race, in my heart of hearts, he finished second.
Uh-huh.
Unfortunately, that's...
Did they end up? I never saw the...
He had the 16-second penalty for the tire pressure thing. So he ended up coming in, I think, way later
14th.
Down the road.
14th, yeah.
Because he crossed the line in second.
Yeah, 100%. I mean,
and he was... To see a KTM up there doing what he was doing, I thought I'd see that from, like, Binder, Pedro Acosta, Bastianini. Not that Maverick doesn't have it in him. He's obviously a good racer, but the fact that, like... He was clearly a level above all the other KTMs this weekend on Sunday.
Or he just had his tire pressure.
Whoa.
See, now you're thinking. Yeah, now I got you thinking about it. Was it him or was it the tire pressure? They called it out. Same thing happened to Pedro last year. Tire pressures. You got to watch your tire pressures. What's weird is I'm pretty sure they can monitor that while they're riding. So obviously he wasn't worried about it, or maybe Mark.
Yeah, because there's that one time last year where Mark Marquez let one of the VR46 guys pass him because he was managing his tire pressure the whole race. And then eventually that did come up and he got docked for the tire pressure penalty, which is...
Yep.
16 seconds is a big penalty.
It is, which means that
I got to do some more research on that tire pressure.
He's probably outside of that tire pressure...
Band
for a long time, I would assume. Maybe for 16 seconds, I don't know.
No, I think the way it is, they measure it a couple times in a race, and if they find it outside the band for longer than a period of time... I got to do some more research, obviously, but, like, then they'll dock you. Because the turnaround between under investigation, like noted under investigation, and then the penalty is always, like, in my opinion, way too long.
Yeah.
Which means there's actually some behind the scenes stuff going on from the calculator, like, all right, yes or no, violation or not. Because the same thing happened to someone last year, and they said, Omdi Domdi, he's good for it, and they, like, let it slide. So it doesn't always result in a penalty. But when it does, it hurts.
It did hurt.
That was such a fantastic, watching a fantastic race, man.
Yeah, so, you know, what I will say is, be it tire pressure or pure raw talent, Maverick put up a good fight out there, and it was awesome. It was great to see. It was a little rough at the end. You could tell, like, so I think Mark would have passed him, period. But he gave it, you know, he gave it to him because he went wide in what was that, turn six, I think. But, yeah, dude, those KTMs have the, when he came down that front straight and he was ready to make that pass, there was like, I mean, two times. He did it to Mark and then he did it to Morbidelli. And it was like nuts. He's behind this Ducati in the slipstream and then you just see him like slip out and then you see a wobble wobble and then you just flash to the helicopter and here he is just moving.
Just out of
move.
That, like, that drag race shot.
Yeah. And the first one, dude, that first one scared me though, because he pulled up next to Mark, tried to outbreak him, and Mark said no freaking
way. The first time it did not work.
Not stick. And I was worried about that. I was like, okay, these two guys are both very veteran. They've also both been in this scenario before racing each other on, I mean Vinales is not a factory bike this year, but they've been in like that scenario specifically. So I trusted them to do that well, but, man, it made for a great race. Having Maverick up there was awesome. I guess a good thing he didn't win, because it would have really sucked to take home your first win and to be the first one to win on four different manufacturers and all this great stuff, and then have it be like, psych, yeah. Not actually. But, yeah, he put up a great fight. It was awesome to have him up there. Also didn't expect it at all, and it's still weird to me that to see that a KTM can do that, and then we don't see any of the other KTMs really.
I'd be curious if what he did like revitalizes them and the capabilities that is that factory bike and the other KTM, like both KTM, the satellite team and the factory bike, to see if they start trying to push and see if they can wring anything more out of it. So if we see KTM as a whole do a little better, like similar in the vein that we saw like VR46 really doing good in these last couple weekends. Not that anyone had any doubts about what the Ducati was capable of. But yeah, this is the first time you're seeing. Yeah, but this is the first time you're seeing like the VR46 colors this far up the grid, at least this year.
Yeah, I mean DG had his like couple moments last year. Also, rough weekend for DG. We'll kind of get into that a little bit when we talk about Alex. But the big kicker for me is Bastianini, man. Bastianini, I guess he's only really been on a Ducati in MotoGP, and I have to remember that. But I had him on a pedestal. He was chosen for the factory Ducati team. He was supposed to do really good. He was out for a lot of it on injury. When he got back, he was kind of wishy-washy. But when he was good, he was, like, good.
I would argue that whole last year with Ducati, he did really well. Like, for Bagnaia's second, I think he did pretty good. And then whenever he picked up that late rate pace, he was sending it. He was, like, really good.
Yeah, I guess I forget, too. He did literally finish fourth in the championship, which is not bad, very respectable.
And he was, like, fighting with Marquez to finish third.
Yeah.
But Marquez, in the end, eventually got it.
Barely. Yeah, they were neck and neck the whole time. So, it's just, it sucks to see that.
If you tell me as a manufacturer, I'll have two riders, and one's going to get first, one's going to get fourth, that's not bad at all.
No.
I would only objectively trade that if I knew I can get, like, a 1-2 or a 1-3, which is effectively what Ducati traded up for.
Yeah, in the...
Just not in the order that they, I think in the order that they thought.
Yeah.
Not in the order that some of the riders would have wanted.
Yeah. But
spoken one of.
Neither here nor there.
Back to the sprint.
Yeah.
Franco Morbidelli coming in third and Aldegar coming in fourth.
Yeah. Furman, Aldegar.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, that's Bill.
Yeah, he's out here. And then DG sixth. So VR46 was up there representing.
Yep. Flash to the sidelines. This is really weird. Sorry. Flash to the sidelines. We had Rossi there on...
He was there this weekend, yeah.
On Sunday. I don't know if he was there the whole weekend. Was he there?
Probably. They recovered him on Sunday for the race.
I don't know why he wouldn't be. But yeah, so Furman Aldegar was like the rookie that I forgot about at the beginning of the season. Because they slapped him on a Grassini bike, and then Alex was doing so good on a Grassini.
Yeah, and then that first weekend, Iagura did so good that he was the rookie they were focusing on.
Yeah, so I like kind of forgot that Aldeguer was there, but he's on a Ducati, the Ducati GP24, which pretty much everyone is on a GP24. We've been over that already. So the Ducatis are all very competitive, matched this year. And I think that's a big part of the reason why we're seeing it. One, you don't have the Prima Pramac guys anymore on Ducatis, so we only have six out there. Yeah,
because Yamaha.
And then two, they're basically all on the same bike. So there's not this like very clear advantage. That GP24 was like the bike of all bikes, which is why they're pretty much still using it. But yeah.
It is also wild to watch people like damage bodywork and crashes and watch just how much the aero affects like their riding performance. Because Sunday there was quite a few collisions,
with a very contacts. Specific person.
Yeah, and you just watch more and more of the aero
So the interesting part is that I don't know if it does as much as they say it does. The commentators are like...
I think it depends on where the bodywork comes off from. I think the tailpiece is maybe not so much, not really sure about that. But those front wings for the downforce, you tell me you lose one of them, you have the other one, I do think that will affect your braking and to some extent your cornering in one direction more than the other one.
Yes.
If you lose both, I think you just lose a downforce and braking, but whatever. To lose one of them, you're kind of lopsided with your downforce, I feel like. Grant, I'm not an expert.
I agree.
But there is some effect.
It's so weird. There's too much. I'm glad they're getting rid of it, because there's too much. When you actually look at like...
They're getting rid of it for the new regulations?
Yeah, they're getting rid of a lot of the aero. But especially like if you look at the KTM, I don't know if you've noticed recently just how much aero the KTM has, specifically in the tail section, which is what they're struggling with, is rear grip. So they've got like stacks of wave-looking wings all the way up the swing arm. One of them this weekend I noticed was running like the tail itself, because they have this weird big old giant spoiler mess.
Like that weird box mess that's at KTMs?
Yeah, so there's the weird boxy-looking...
Not the dinosaur tail like the Ducatis?
Spoiler. But then there was another one that was literally the tail, I think it was... Maybe it was Anea, just came back into a no-crap box. It was the ugliest thing I've ever seen on a motorcycle, because it was, like, beautiful little lines, and not a GP bikes aren't that beautiful, but, you know, you get, like, sharp lines and all this, like, sweet curvature.
Very aesthetic.
And it was just, like, box. That's it. And I was like, that is terrible.
So the engine's cooked up.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Aero. It's terrible. Get rid of it. I'm glad it's getting gone. Got another year and a half of it, this season, next season, then it'll be gone. But the weird part to me is that the commentators will talk a huge game. Because they were talking with Mark, he lost his little tail section. Alex ran into the back of him. This happened in the race, first lap, first corner.
Yeah, very early on in the race.
Literally first freaking corner.
A little brotherly love tap there.
Yeah, which is what let Morbidelli kind of go. I thought Morbidelli was going to be able to keep that up. He kind of lost his tires in the end, but...
Yeah, he just started, as soon as that happened, he started just falling back in places.
The commentators latched onto this, oh my goodness, Mark's going to have such a hard time. This is going to be insane to ride this bike like this. He lost one of his two dinosaur fins in the back. One of them.
Yeah, I didn't think that was going to be as big of a deal as they thought. I thought that like the bigger body damage was Alex Marquez when he lost half his front wing.
Yeah, later on, and that one absolutely, but the dude still ran a good race.
He did.
That's what's weird about it. So Alex Marquez... ran into Mark there. They didn't do anything about that one. But then later on, they never really replayed it well enough for me to tell exactly what happened between him and DG.
Yeah, the VR46 bike, yeah.
But I think it was 100% Alex's fault. They called it Alex's fault.
Yeah, he did wave him off, like, I guess, like, an apology in this situation. Like, he realized it was his fault. Because that move was kind of aggressive, and it didn't really stick. So it kind of resulted in, like, contacting, and now they're both falling back in the race. And it's like...
Yeah. Unfortunately, DG got the way worst of that. Alex had to do a long lap. And had half of a winglet on the front, but he still finished, what, eighth?
Seventh.
I think. Seventh? Because Vinales got kicked back, yeah.
Oh, sixth.
Sixth.
Quartararo, seventh.
Even better. Yeah. So, I mean, you had the two Red Boys, Morbidelli, Zarco. Zarco was...
I was watching. Every time they showed him, I was like...
Hey, dude.
Are we doing it?
Today's the day?
I want him to podium... So. I love Franco Morbidelli. Love him to death. He's good. He's a good rider. But I was like...
Zarco.
Zarco, though.
I was wondering why Zarco doesn't have a spot in the factory.
Factory team?
I wouldn't be surprised if he does get one.
Take one of your spot?
Because no one else wants to be on a Honda. And Zarco's doing better than both the two factory riders right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if Honda's like, do you want it? They'll give you a little more money. And they let him take it.
Not going to lie, I love the factory Honda red. But, man, those cash draw colors for the LCR Honda team, I'm just such a fan of that color scheme and livery for racing in general.
It does look pretty good. It looks pretty good. Zarco scared me in the end, though. I was very, very worried in the end. I don't know if you noticed or not, but, he ran a great race. He was doing great, passing some people, keeping up with some people. You know, a Honda up in the top five again, the only rider to consistently put one up there. But in the end, there were a couple close calls.
He's out here riding the absolute limit, sending it just to get what he can out of that bike. And you know what? He's doing it. Hasn't crashed out this
year. Yeah.
That's the scary part.
He's doing a great job of it. But, dude, I was sitting there. I was like, oh, don't. Please don't lose it. At the same time, I've got the Crescini team on my fantasy. So, if you do, I'm not going to be super mad. But, you know, for his sake, I did not want him to lose that. But he almost lost the front, many times, right at the end.
They called it out a couple times.
Yeah. And then I that kind of clued me in. Last couple laps, I was like, woo! Oh! Yeah, it was rough.
A little controlled chaos going on over there.
Yep. Alex came back and ran a great race. And that's why the aero stuff is always so weird to me. I think it matters. I do think it's important. But I don't think it is as big of a game. And more to your point, definitely depends on, where it is. But
I think also it might also depend on the rider's specific rider style too.
Yeah.
Because I know some riders, they'll come in and they'll when they corner, they'll put their bodies in the path of the dirty air of this. I don't know. There's I think I watched an video on it one time and now now I'm an expert.
Jorge Martin.
I wish.
Yeah. Jorge Martin shoves his shoulder on the ground so that all the air underneath the bike is disrupted.
Yeah,
so it doesn't blah, blah, blah.
I have to actually unironically do some real research on that because I am curious as to what the effect is. Granted, at my skill level, that doesn't mean anything. But at their level, it's such a high difference.
I think the aero is important. I also think there's a lot of aero on Ducati's bikes specifically that is actually 100% useless and doesn't do anything.
I was watching a video, another YouTube channel. They did collab with MotoGP. They're hanging out with Jack Miller last year, and they would not let you see the bike without the plastics on, so you didn't see what was under the plastics. And I'm like,
interesting.
I'll send you the link. It's a good video.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a big belief that personally, I think back in the day, Ducati stuck the dinosaur wings on there and never needed them.
Yeah, no, everybody's got the dinosaur. Well, not everybody, but it's the more popular rear tail wing section on the grid.
And everyone's got a whole bunch of tail aero. I think Ducati's got something else. Maybe the ride height device is just set up perfectly. I don't know, but I don't think the aero is what gets you rear grip. And that's what makes the Ducati one of the best bikes out there right now, is the fact that they can come out of a corner, get on it, and use it. KTM has the power. We saw that. When you can hook it, it hooks, and it's gone. They're having trouble hooking it. Same thing with Honda. That was, the big issue with Honda when Mark was on it was that he would be trying to... One of the big issues is just getting that power down in the rear. And Yamaha's had... everyone's having that issue with actually getting all this new... They've got the engine. They've got the power. They've got the capability, but they can't get it to be put to ground.
Because, when you... Because, from my limited understanding, the more you do in one area, it will affect another area. And you have so many options. You have, rear aero, ride height device, swing arm length, angles, just the way you apply, how much power you put down, how you apply that. There's so much other factors that go into it. And it's I'd love to be able to see behind the scenes and talk down with one of these engineers and have them explain to me just how they get each one, how they optimize each one of these things, right?
Yeah.
It's oh, we chose this length of a swing arm. We chose that because of these reasons with this specific aero combination.
You get to talk to Gigi Deligna, Mr. Unibrow.
Yeah, I'd love that.
He'd be the guy. Just catch him right after he kisses the bike.
Yeah. Can you give me all of your trade secrets?
I won't give them to anyone else.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'll understand 30% of it, but that's all I need.
Yeah. But I truly think even Ducati's like got some setups. Other weird trick. They figured out some other perfect formula, and then they stuck some arrow on the back that could confuse everyone.
Look here, not here.
Yeah, and I think it's been working for years now because we've seen all this crazy freaking... I mean, heck, Aprilia had literally the air pressure sensors on their bikes last year in that section to try and do some F1 style testing to figure it out. I'm like, I literally think Gigi Deligna is just sitting back laughing. So he's like, yeah, put these dinosaur wings on to fool people, and it worked. And it worked great.
It's been working for half a decade now.
Yeah, it's awesome. But, okay, before we get to Jorge, we got to talk about Ignaya. I kind of started on this earlier. If you guys want a little bit more structure in the show, that is probably not going to happen. We're really trying to keep this low-key. There's two dudes just chilling, talking about motorcycles and talking about racing. That's how it's going to be. So if we're jumping around too much, though, I'll take a comment on it. Let me know. We can work on it maybe a little bit better. But, you know, things pop up. You hear them, and you just got to talk about them. But Bagnaia. Bagnaia.
Shut up on Sunday, definitely. Saturday, but today? Sunday?
He was there for it, yeah. He was there for it. Had a pretty good start. I think there was a lot of other stuff going on right at the beginning that let him kind of scoot through. The weird part is that we left COTA. This is what I was about to say earlier. We left COTA, and everyone was like, Bagnaia's back. That was great for his...
It's one race, calm down. Not that he did good, but that's one race. A lot can happen. Over the course of, will be like 20 more, just around 20, or so, maybe less more races for us this season. That's a lot of racing.
So here's the deal. He won in COTA, and he did, 100%, right? And I'm not trying to take the win away from him.
He won because Mark crashed out.
A guy in front of him crashed out. I don't even care who it is. The guy in the lead that had the lead by 2.5 seconds crashed out on his own. Complete own mistake. And then Bagnaia won the race. I don't care who was in front of him. Yes, you won the race, but had that crash not happened, you wouldn't have. So they're all talking about how good this is for his ego, and not just ego, but everything else. It's helping him out mentally. It's going to make him stronger. He's going to be good to go. He should, you know, he felt like he was back. He was on the GP24.
That's the narrative.
That season, but then he shows up the next weekend and qualifies in 11th. And then in the sprint, can't do anything. In the race, he did okay, but he wasn't pushing up there the whole time. So what I'm really worried about
is... And we know the bike's capable of it.
Yeah, we've seen it. And he went back to last year's bike, which he did amazing on all of last year, and that's the bike that everyone else is on doing great. So there's no, like, I don't have any excuse from him. I'm honestly worried about, like, what are we going to see 2 weeks from now? When they head to Spain, I believe. Let me double check that. Calendar.
It's like, on one hand, it could be just him being mature, bringing the bike home, coming home, collecting points. The only downside is, like, Mark could keep doing what he's doing, crash out occasionally, still coming ahead, just because he has such a dominant lead for the 1-2 sprint wins he keeps, 1-2 sprint race wins he keeps getting, which will buy him a position to be more comfortable taking more risks.
Mm-hmm.
So unless Bagnaia also starts pushing it, I don't want to say he's settled for, like, not first in the championship, because I don't think he's, like that.
No.
But unless he starts, like, stepping something up. And I know he's good for it.
He's good. It's weird, because at times it feels like he has it. And in COTA, you know, 2 weeks ago at COTA, he came out and he was fighting. Like, he didn't... Like I said, all credit where credit's due, he won the race for a reason. He didn't do bad in the sprint either. But then the sprint yesterday, he got borderline no points. I think he took home 1 point in the sprint.
He was right, yeah, barely.
Which that dropped him.
To be fair, though, he in the standings, he's not that. The gap between him and Marquez, Alex, is smaller than the gap between Mark and Alex. So.
Yeah.
Because it's like 123 for Mark, 106 for Mark for Alex, and then like 97 for Bagnaia.
Yeah.
So if he just keeps showing up, he can maintain being competitive for second in the championship. But once he starts taking more risks, which I don't want to see him crash out. I want to see him, like, do good. But I don't think he'll be approaching Mark anytime soon. Just the gap keeps growing every week. Unless Mark starts, like, having real issues and starts coming in second or third or more than that, or start qualifying bad, which I don't see happening this year.
Or starts DNFing. I think that'd be the big one. Yeah. At this point, the gap's pretty big.
But Mark Marquez is such a dominant lead. I don't think he needs to push so hard that he ends up DNFing.
Yeah, I would agree with that, but he's also Mark Marquez.
You tell me he gets like a 1-2 second lead, he doesn't have to push. Like, I think COTA was an anomaly. Granted, he does have a history of crashing out, but, like,
no,
you saw what happened today. He clearly had it in reserve when he made his pass. He got a cute couple seconds, and then he just was like, all right, couple hot laps, and then he just maintained that till the end.
Yeah, no, 100%. The dude is calculated as crap. When he was in COTA, an anomaly, absolutely. He went a little bit too far over on a wet curb.
Yeah.
Kind of maybe forgot it was wet, miscalculated how far over, whatever.
Because once he gets that lead, no one's been... Once he establishes the lead, barring a mistake, no one's racing with him.
Yeah, no.
They're, like, fighting for scraps. He's in first.
He, like,
you
he,
guys
he
can figure out... Yeah, you can figure out the order behind
and
them.
And they've said it. Yeah. He's just playing with them.
Yeah, it's I saw it a couple weeks ago, yeah.
It's nuts. They literally came out and said it. They're like, yeah, he was just playing with us. Then you look at it today, it's like, yeah, I'm fighting back here with Maverick. It's like, see ya, gone. And it what's crazy is he doesn't need to, but the guy will, because he knows he can. So
let me get that screen time.
But yeah, I don't know. I am not a big Bagnaia fan. That being said, I like having him up there. I would like to see him and Mark like fight peacefully, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to see now they're being stupid, like we kind of did last year.
I think now they're on the same team. I do think there'll be some talks behind the scenes, like, hey, you guys can race, but it better be clean.
Yeah.
Like house, should, like how, like be. Some kind of team or house rules. Like, hey, you can race, but if I, you both better not crash each other out.
Yeah. 100%.
Because if we take home no points because of your egos, I think Daddy Ducati's going to have some words.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, that's what I want, right? Yeah. Like I said, last year we kind of saw a couple of races where it was like, okay, like one of you needs to grow up. Unfortunately, of the two that I expect to grow up, it's not the one that is more grown up in age. And it probably should be, but yeah, anyway,
I don't know what to find out.
We don't need to get into that. What I hope doesn't happen is that I hope we don't show up next week to a Bagnaia that is still stuck in the doldrums and is just sad and making excuses.
Because it's not like he can't qualify, because he on average qualified rather well most of if not most of last year.
Yeah, I think what we're running into last year. I don't think he was super sad about losing the championship. Now, that I say that...
I mean, two championships back-to-back, and then he comes in runner-up, knowing that the guy is going to objectively a worse team. Is like, his biggest regret would have been that he's getting Mark Marquez on his team. That would have been his biggest issue. Not Jorge is a title contender next year, unfortunately.
Yeah.
As much as I love Jorge Martin.
No, absolutely. And, you know, I say he wasn't too sad about it. I'm sure the guy was actually quite distraught. He didn't win the championship. But at the same time, like, it was a good fight all the way through. They both put up their best. It was a solid fight. He had something to give every week. I think it has been a long time, honestly, if ever in MotoGP, the Bagnaia has not been able to be
more competitive with his teammate.
A front runner.
Now, yeah.
Yeah. Right. He was the star at Ducati while he was with Jack Miller. He was the star at Ducati while he was with Ennea Bastianini. He didn't win the championship last year, but he was Ducati's lead man on the red, going nuts. Bastianini was still there doing okay, but like, he's the guy. And now this year, there's a new guy in town in the same team that is doing things that he cannot do. And I think that's really starting to get to him. That's what it feels like. I hope he can kind of hurdle over that, get through it, and make it and be okay. People keep saying the only guy that can beat Mark Marquez is Mark Marquez this year.
Yeah, because it sounds cool.
I kind of agree with that, but I think if there was one other person on the grid besides Alex Marquez, which is really weird, and I wasn't expecting this.
I love seeing Alex and Mark.
It's great.
Like, battle up there. Just, yeah. Like, the fact that they're brothers is, like, at the highest stage, like, the premier class of motorcycle racing, street road course race, I guess.
Yeah, how much crap did Alex take home, though, in the... Yo, man, what'd you do to my bike? Like, well, don't worry, mine's worse. Like, that's what I would... Like, they get to go home and just keep talking about it. All the other riders is like, yeah, you get a couple seconds if you're in the top three. But beyond that, you just talk with the team. Those two are like, yeah, hey, let's keep talking.
The cool part is like, they've been talking about it for years. Yeah. And they'll go in the same like categories. Like, remember that time where we're like 15 or like 5 or like 20? Yeah. Like, there's like the same like, yeah, I beat your ass then, I'll beat your ass now. You got lucky because of the, like, though, like, I don't know. I feel like I'd love to hear a conversation like that behind the scenes.
Absolutely.
Little brother shit, brother talking.
But yeah, it's I think that Bagnaia should be the only one that can give Mark a run for his money, realistically. What we're seeing is a sad Bagnaia behind Alex, and then maybe
I don't know that he's sad. I think he's trying, and that's just what he's putting out. I just think he's had a couple of bad qualifying rounds.
I think the boy's sad. You watch the interviews after the races?
Not this last one.
So you watch the interviews, and the guy's just like, yeah, you know, we're a little disappointed, but we have to be happy with what we have because we're doing the absolute best and we're doing really good things, and we got to find a little bit more.
These are all factual statements.
Yeah, with a very sad and disheartened Pekka Bagnaia, who's not the star of the show.
We know, what was it, DJ Antonio energy from last weekend? Yeah. We need that energy.
I'm going to go to town and drink 30 beers.
Oh, well, he's a lot more than that. Yeah. He's like, I didn't think I'd get this far. Yeah. That's the energy I felt like over the last weekend.
That was awesome. I need to go back and rewatch that specifically. That should be a saved in history.
Hey, but VR46 in the standings, 4 and 5, like 4th and 5th in the standings, and I'm like, I'm happy for it.
That's good. I was hoping there would be an Aprilia and a KTM and a Yamaha and a Honda in there.
They're just, you know, way down.
So Quartararo qualified 3rd, did well in the sprint.
Yep.
It's just
he sad. 3rd came down to 5th, and then I kind of expected him to fall back down from 3rd in the race, and he did.
Yeah.
He
way faster than I expected. Did. I think the commotion at the beginning of the race, like into corner one with Alex, kind of threw a whole bunch of people off.
Yeah.
And then Maverick coming out of nowhere because of his low tire pressure.
It's like, I don't think Yami's a bad bike. It's just like not as competitive as a lot of the other bikes. And given the time, length, distance of an actual race, it gives more opportunities for the other bikes to show the technical fallings of like the Yamaha, I feel like. Because like Cardo's a good rider, but like, it felt like only a matter of time, and it felt like the sprint was short enough that it like minimized the damage done as he fell back in places, whereas the race was that could just happen for longer. And yeah. Then, like you were saying, the commotion that happened toward the beginning of the race, like, it did not help. Because he needs to be on his game and not make any mistakes just to, like, maintain its pace.
Yeah.
At no point is he ever pushing up further than, like, at no point was he, like, going to hunt down, like, Vinales or Mark or Alex or Bagnaia.
No.
At the time. It was like, they make mistakes, they fall back, not him going up to them.
Yeah.
Which kind of, you know, breaks my heart when I see that every weekend.
The saddest part.
And then Jack Miller, man. Oh.
We'll get there. The saddest part for me with Quartararo, the poor guy, sets a hot lap in qualifying, gets out there and goes nuts. And he's a talented guy. He can freaking race. And he knows he's on a Yamaha, so he knows where he needs to be. But they get to any sort of straightaway.
You can't look at it.
There's nothing, he can't do anything. His only hope is that he comes back and outbreaks immediately, gets in close enough, and then gets him somewhere. But if he's not right there with them, it's done. It's gone. Yamaha's got to figure that out. If they don't, like, they must be paying that guy great, because I want him stuck around. And I'm sure someone else would have taken him. Yeah, Jack Miller, poor Jack, wrecked out. I figured out why.
They were saying he's sick all weekend as well, so yeah. Like, he just wasn't on his A game. Man.
Yeah, I heard that when he wrecked out. They're like, yeah, he also had these other sick issues.
The fact that he could race like that, like if I had any of what they were saying, I was like, I'll be home on my toilet.
Yeah, well, that's what Sean Mir, gastro, inter, yep. Whatever the heck, I don't know. I was like, oh, like, I think that's like a big disease. Maybe that's why he's always wrecking out. He's actually just looking for the Porta John.
He's just trying to get there. He's like, I gotta go. Now.
Oh, I don't know. But see, because he pulled out early of the race. Because I'm always looking for him now to be like, did I miss him wrecking? Is that where the yellow flag was?
Because you'll see, you'll be like, looking for the ticker symbols to like start falling down. Like, oh, okay, this person crashed out or something.
But he's been so far down, and then he pulled out, and I was like, oh, okay. Marini, I keep forgetting that Marini even exists, and I'll see a Honda, I'll be like, oh yeah, that's right.
Finishing 10th, he is installed. He is there.
Yeah, doing some things. Once again, I'd
half whip the pack.
Wouldn't be surprised if Zarco and him kind of flopsy a little bit. But it is time that we finish up with, I think, one of the last guys we got to talk about, which is the Jordi Martín.
Jorge, you know,
I shouldn't say his name wrong.
He just came back from essentially missing the first month of MotoGP, effectively. Yes. The first like month and a little, maybe a month and chain, because it wasn't every single weekend. But, you know, I just want him to, like, bring it home. But, you know, he crashed out in the race, so there was that.
So we've kind of already talked about him a little bit over the past few episodes, throughout the first few races.
I still stand him, though.
Jorge, tons of talent. Very talented guy. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, why do I think that Jorge can actually do something on this Aprilia? And I didn't expect anything this weekend.
Yeah, this is first weekend actually racing the Aprilia.
Yeah.
Because he didn't get any of the, well, he got some, but not all the testing.
He got half a day.
And then he's been out since then, right? Yeah. So this is his first weekend actually doing any kind of like free practice, sprint, qualifying, anything on the Aprilia. So I'd expect him to like, oh, the Aprilia is different in these ways. It's good here. It's bad here. I need to do this to adjust my riding style in these areas and these areas. So I like, because it's not like you just take it out and back, run it for a few hours whenever you want. It's like, no, these events are when you get to ride it. So like, I expect the first couple weeks weekends, kind of like Mark when he first got in the Grissini last year.
Yeah.
The first couple weekends, he's just figuring it out. Yeah. Then he figured it out.
Well, 100%. And also, like, the team needs to get the bike set up for you, because that's half of it, is not just how does the bike go, but okay, hey, I'm noticing this happens when I do this. Is that a bike problem? Is that a me problem? How do I and the bike both change to bring it together to have the best package? And yeah, you're absolutely right. He has had zero time. I think he had 1.5 of a day of practice on that Aprilia. He had the preseason testing or postseason testing, whichever way you want to call it, last year. But that's not
the current bike.
No, that's just kind of like your first. Well, it's kind of the current bike. It's not. It is. It can be. There's parts of it. Anyway,
it's nuanced.
But you
or
know,
maybe it is the current bike.
He wasn't there to try out any of the different stuff they had. He wasn't, like, he hasn't had any of that. So this weekend really for him should have just been, we're putting laps down. We're getting used to this bike. We're getting
things. Yeah, crashing out doesn't help because you're missing critical laps of data.
Yeah. Well, the hard part is that he's doing all of this with an injury still.
Yeah, I was afraid that he would exacerbate whatever injury he's still racing under, because he did go to the medical center, but I wasn't sure if that was like a checkup, just in case, or like something serious happened, because he was on his knees, but you never know when they're on their knees. Is like when they get up, they're on their knees, you never know, like, are they like in great, granted they just crashed, so it was a fast crash, he was like, are they in great pain emotionally, or are they in great pain physically? Is the kind of physical pain where I'm going to need a lot of aspirin and I'm just going to hurt in the morning? Is it the kind of pain where it's like, congratulations, you're missing the next couple GPs coming forward? So it's like, you never know those kind of things. So I hope he gets well soon and races. He takes as much time as he needs.
Yep. We're headed to Spain in 2 weeks. The good thing about that for him is that Spain's a home track for him. Maybe I know, like, because we've got two races in Spain, and I don't know which one is home for them of the Spanish riders.
I think at that level, maybe both, but I don't know.
Yeah, I know, like, some of them have, like, specifically, like, I'm from that town or a town closer to there, something like that. But
because, like, Spain is only so big, so it's not like America was like, let's say you had five America tracks, your America track could be like 30 hours away,
Washington, New York,
whereas Spain, Florida, it's like not Texas. That big.
Yeah, no, I agree. Nothing's as big as America.
I was watching it, yeah.
I'm hoping, hopefully, like you said, they crashed in and do him too dirty. Hopefully he can get back out there. Hopefully also he takes these 2 weeks and recovers more, because he came in after the sprint, ran a okay sprint, as good as I would expect him to do with zero testing and an injury. And you watched him, he came in immediately just ice on his left wrist, right? Which means that dude was out there hurting and just trying to get some time and some data. So hopefully he can get back up to shape. I think right after the Spain round, we have a test in Spain, which would be good. And then 2 weeks after that, we're headed to France. And when is the summer break this year? We don't have that much of a summer break this year.
So, to fit as many races they did, the summer would have to be short. The season would have to be longer.
Yeah. It looks like
it's like 3 weeks.
Oh, hang on. Grand Prix of Czech and then August. So there's a month.
Yeah.
Between round 12 and 13.
You can fit that. You can fill that month with some motorcycle racing of your own. Play cards right so you keep preoccupied.
There you go. That's not a bad, not a bad idea. Although racing in the Southeast in August.
Well, you gotta want it.
Less than ideal.
Yeah, you gotta want it.
Drink water, go faster.
Yeah, you gotta want it.
That's what they say.
It can be miserable.
Yeah, absolutely.
If anything, like last year's few track days down south, that were to believe they're on that time of the year.
Yeah. Hopefully he can come back. I'm looking forward to it. What we have forgotten to do up to this point.
Fantasy.
Is our fantasy. So if you stuck around this long in the show, thank you. Thank you for sticking around. We're going to close out with some fantasy for the week. We'll get our weekly point winner and give you the top three. We did have another person join in. Looks like Wolf's joined in. And glad to have you on here. You got some catching up to do. Good luck. Hopefully your points transfer over. I don't know why they wouldn't, unless you literally just created an account. But anyway, good to have you on here. We got 7 people total now. I'm still hitting up 4th place, so it looks like I'll probably just stay there forever. You two that are sitting in first really have it figured out. And Kelly and I here, I think we figured out the secrets.
Yeah,
we're going to see if we can't maybe make some
next
changes.
Year. I've used up my trades before I figured out what the secret was.
Yeah. But your weekly point winner is Actually, holy cow, can you believe it?
Is it me?
At a whopping 198 points.
I'll take it.
Kelly OJ from the United States of America. Is that you?
It might be.
Still sitting all the way down in sixth place, yeah, which is almost dead last, but you got 198 points this last week.
Yeah, it turns out boosting Mark Marquez was the right play.
It was a good play. He did take it first, which is great. You also had Alex and then Fabio, who did a pretty good weekend, and then Bagnaia, and then your team and constructor is not good. So we won't.
Yeah, we're definitely picking next year's team based off the constructors first and then our riders after.
There you go.
Because I've seen some of the point hauls.
Hit me up on Instagram at JKMotoEntertainment. We'll send you a weekly point winner prize.
Hits you up right now. Hits you up live.
There you go. But in first place, holding it down still, we have Shifty from Canada. Second place, Cam Head. And third place, Shaky Moto still. And all y'all are pretty much pulling in around your same average points. Looks like Shaky Moto, you went down a little bit this week. So keep that in mind. We are headed to Spain next week. We got a lot of Spanish riders. I expect them all to be trying to do their best out there. We got Pedro Acosta. We got Jorge Martin, the Marquez brothers, Vinales. Who else is Spanish?
Those Marquezes?
I said that. There's got to be a couple more.
You said both Marquezes, Jorge Martin and Pedro?
Yeah.
Maverick?
I think I said that.
I'm running out.
Anyway. Wow, there's less than I thought. Because you got Quartararo and Zarco are French.
Wait a minute. I can just...
And then you got every other Ducati rider is Italian.
Aldeguer. Rins. Fernandez.
And Mir.
Raul Fernandez and Augusto Fernandez and Mir.
Okay. Yeah, so Rins and Mir are the two that I was thinking of. Raul Fernandez also. Yeah. So quite a few Spain boys out there. They'll be trying to hook that up.
If any Spanish riders, they might just eagle out.
Possibly.
There's no home track advantage if everybody's at home.
Yeah. There's a lot of Spain is doing something. If you're not from Spain, you can't race MotoGP.
Yeah. Is that what they have, like the Red Bull Rookies Cup?
I think so. Yep. Yeah. And they got all the Moto2 stuff over there. Spain does a lot of like little kid stuff.
They got to figure it out. Well, that's what you got to start them young.
Yep.
That's why you're not a racer, because you didn't start, you know.
Yeah, I know. I blame my parents. Yeah. I'm just kidding. But there is something to be said. If you want your kids to get into it, you got to start them young. So go buy your kids a bike. And we'll end on that note. Once again, if you're the weekly point winner for the week, please hit me up on Instagram at JKMotoEntertainment. We appreciate all of you guys watching, listening. Go check out the YouTube channel if you haven't. If you are on the YouTube channel and you stuck around for a full hour-long podcast and you don't want to do that again, check out the RSS link down below in the feed. And while you're down there, there's a little link called BiddingerMotorsports.com, which is a good friend of ours down in Texas, down at MSRH, otherwise known as the Biddinger Motorsports Campus, if you will. Great place of learning, much learning to be had down there. So hit up his website, get some private coaching and training down there with him if you live in the Texas area. MSRH is a pretty sweet track. But we will end there, and we will see you all in the next episode.
Around at 100 miles an hour.